Great. So welcome, everyone. My name is Daniel Four, and this recording is a conversation and a teaching on the topic of practicing with integrity, with humility, with awareness, the traditions of other people's ancestors, which is an perhaps intentionally provocative way to open a discussion about some topics that have a lot of understandable charge to them. And for more about my practice, if you're encountering this recording in some way, check out ancestralmedicine.org. And what we're going to do is dive in. I'm going to speak for maybe 30, 40 minutes. It'll take just an hour. And if you have questions as we're going, feel free to type them into the chat. That can be to me personally or to everyone. Just be mindful that if you're engaging, which is welcome, to do it in a way that is making space for others' voices as well. So let me try to lay out some context on this topic from where I'm coming from. For one, I'm of German, English, Irish, American at this point, ancestry. And someone asked, is it disrespectful to the container to multitask while tuning in? No, it's totally fine. I will try not to do that myself, but multitask if you need to. My own ancestry is German, English, Irish, early arrivals to North America. So colonizer, early settler ancestry to this continent. I am not going to speak at length about my background here because on my website, it gets a little boring to me and to participants. But briefly, what could be relevant is that I am an initiate and a priest in training in Yoruba tradition or Ifa Orisha tradition based in Yoruba-speaking West Africa. So I've been four times so far to Nigeria and I'm a student of the language. And so that's an important part of my own path and training. And that gives me some context from which to speak about what it's like personally to be someone practicing a tradition that's not of my blood, as someone who focuses a lot on the mysteries of the blood ancestors and how to navigate that. My motivation for even speaking about this to some degree is seeing a lot of what feels like rigidity and dogmatism on one side of the discussion at times, and then on the other side, a lot of just ignorant, I can do whatever I want attitude. And so I'm not trying to bring some definitive answer to the topic. My intent is to hopefully frame the topic in a way that allows for some nuance around it. Because unfortunately, a lot of our engagement with these topics happens on social media. And while there's a lot of goodness to that, it can also destroy the sense of nuance and relationality, which I think is really needed to navigate the topics with integrity. So that's what I'm hoping to bring a bit of to the conversation. So let me say, as a framing, on the one hand, if people I assume already get this, we have this terrible, terrible history of the double genocides of toward Native and African people and the ongoing racism, sexism, colonialism that's a part of reality in the United States, other places as well, but let me speak from my position as an American white guy. And so we have a terrible history, and that's not complete. It's still playing out in many different ways, period. At the same time, we have a situation where a lot of folks, not only, but in some ways predominantly, of European ancestry are feeling called to different kinds of earth-honoring spirituality and realize that there's not an easy way to go about that, or there's not an easy, there's not intact traditions from Europe. There's just not. There are reconstructed pagan traditions. There are some, groups like the Sami and some small number of intact indigenous communities. But for the most part, people of European lineages like myself who are like, wow, I'm drawn to ritual. What do I do? It's not a straightforward path. And so sometimes there's a draw to engage more ancestrally intact traditions, indigenous or otherwise. And that naturally surfaces the really funky and painful, unresolved history and ongoing systemic problems around race, racism, oppression, etc. And so So it gets supercharged super quick. And my stance is that it's possible for white people to honor a calling to the earth and even at times participate in traditions that are not of their blood ancestry. And I'm generalizing it. This applies also to other than white people. But to honor this calling in a way that's actually beneficial or culturally constructive rather than harmful. But to do that requires a good bit of awareness and crashing around and getting it wrong and all of it. So let me say what I think is what not to do first as a kind of whittling away. One is what I don't know if it's the right terminology, I don't have a degree in this stuff, but what I would consider is racial essentialism. Basically saying there are X number of races on earth, everyone belongs to one of those, and you should only practice the traditions that are available to your specific race. I think this is problematic for a number of reasons. One, there's a whole bunch of multiracial people. And when presented with that, they're like, so should I do the black people thing or the white people thing or the native people thing? Because I'm all those things. And so that can be confusing and just like, not connective. Two, it's not how the elders of most races, so to speak, on earth view the question of inclusion and identity and ability to participate in their traditions. Not everyone on the planet has deeply internalized this model of different races that was developed in the last few centuries, mostly by European colonizing white dudes in order to justify oppression. So some people just don't predominantly see themselves through the lens of being an Asian race or being African race or whatever. It might be an element that they're aware of, but it's not necessarily their defining sense of identity, and it's not necessarily how they view ability to practice what they're up to. And three, you know, the idea of there being different races is totally a colonialist construct in a way that's deeply problematic. It's a social construct that's become reified or that has a very deadly reality that can't be avoided. And so one of the big challenges is how to participate in dismantling what is so toxic about this essentialized view of different races without recreating the problem or using only that language around race. And so you're right, you know, there's people living that question, and I'm not presuming to be expert on it, but I'm saying be a bit suspicious when people are like, there are definitely these different races, and that's just how it is, and everybody needs to like line up in your respective camp. It's too simplistic, and I'm not minimizing the reality of privilege typically based on color and a culture here that is still has a lot of essentially white supremacy, whether or not you call it that. But be suspicious about race as the defining thing for identity. I'll circle back to that a little bit later. But so I'm not taking it to that extreme. The other extreme, of course, is I can do whatever I want. Let's totally disregard the history of oppression and colonialism and all that. It's a super like non-relational, non-sophisticated, developmentally young view that's totally off-putting to less white people who are like, really? White people can do whatever they want. That's really a new idea. Not so much. It's not getting good results. And so if you're on the call, you're probably not coming from that angle. But I see the dialogue around this sometimes go into intense racial essentialism. And then the response is like, well, that's dumb. Therefore, I can do whatever I want. And both of those are lacking in necessary nuance. And so a couple other things not to do that happen a lot is generalizing about all times and all peoples, meaning there's just one solution for everybody everywhere. An example is a lot of Native North American communities tend to have a taboo around charging money for participation in ceremony. Even though me and most people I know, especially who are not Native, have given money that's been accepted, which I'm totally fine with, at the few hundred ceremonies I've been participant in, it still wasn't set up as like, there's a charge for this. So there's a taboo around it, and that's fine. It's up to any given culture to set how they want to handle that. However, what isn't fine is to then say all cultures on earth who charge money for ceremony are screwed up or not cool. It's not a taboo that is present in West Africa, for example, or I'm generalizing. So let me say in Yoruba culture for ritual services. And so it's actually taboo ritually to not have an exchange, which often involves money. And so to take one criteria and apply it to all other cultures, totally problematic. And there are places to do this. New Age Fraud website, for example, which some people hold as a beneficial thing. I do not hold it in that way. Puts on blast, for example, Maladoma Somme, different African teachers who, or he happens to be one African teacher who charges money for ceremony. Totally what you do in Dogara culture. And so I would suggest that there's a tendency toward fundamentalist thinking or rigidity that can be present in any human being. And one of the criterias of that is the way that I see it is appropriate for everybody in all places at all times. And it's a kind of intellectual colonialism or something. It's just like exporting of your values onto everybody else. So don't do that. And look out for it and be willing to call it out when it's happening. And another is presuming to tell leaders of indigenous or otherwise intact traditions how they should handle themselves when you're not part of their group and you're not their elder. And this, it might seem like so obvious to people to not do that. And yet I, to give an example, I've had the experience of, I think, well-meaning and otherwise people doing good work in the world. I see your question now, Christopher, I'll come back to it. Telling me that they would be happy. Now, this is a European ancestored person, white person, essentially, telling me they'd be happy to tell my teacher in Nigeria why he shouldn't share his culture with non-Yoruba people. And I'm like, are you serious? So you are saying that what you believe to be the best way to handle it, based on the politics that are arising out of the history in North America, those things are appropriate for all other people on earth in all other situations. That's interesting. I respectfully disagree. And so anytime someone's like, this is how it needs to be for all people all the time, take it as a red flag. Yeah. So Christopher is saying races or cultures, there is a difference. No doubt. So let me go ahead and speak. I'm not sure how I probably conflated the two in the way I was speaking. Let me try to speak to one thing that I think is constructive around race. One is to try to bring more nuance than just white people, black people, red or native people, Asian people, but to look more at specific cultures, specific ethnicities. It's more rich to say, like, I'm a German, English, Irish ancestored person from Ohio, Pennsylvania. Am I a white guy? Absolutely. And it's totally important to own that and all the privilege and complexity that goes with that. And simultaneously, to be able to recognize the more specific cultural identity. Like having gone multiple times with African American people who may or may not have Yoruba ancestry themselves, because there are hundreds and hundreds of different cultures in West Africa, to Yoruba land in particular, there's not necessarily a homecoming thing there as a vibe from the locals, because from their perspective, non-Yoruba people are Oyinbo, they're outsiders. Whether they're black, they're white, whatever, they're Oyinbo. And that at times can be kind of jarring and like disappointing to African-American folks who go there and expect a warmer welcome based on a shared identification of being African. And so my point is a lot of people don't I come back to a lot of people don't have their primary identity based on their race, but rather their specific culture, their specific ethnicity, their specific local identity. And so bringing that nuance to the topic of race is good. It doesn't, in the same way, just because I'm a white guy doesn't mean I can roll up in Sami land in northern Scandinavia and be like, hey, I'm white, let's get down with the yoiking and teach me how to do Sami stuff. I have no standing there just because I happen to also be white. And it's the same for black folks who go to Africa. They're like, hey, what's up, American? Like, talk to me about why you're here. And I hope you brought money. And so, yeah, so let me say just that. Hopefully that responded, Christopher, some to what you were bringing. Go back to my notes here just to not get too in the weeds. So, yeah, don't tell people what time it is if they're not from your culture and you don't understand the situation there, obviously. So more specifically, whether or not anyone agrees with it, there are a whole bunch of humans on Earth practicing and even being teachers and lineage carriers and traditions that are not of their blood ancestry. It's already happening. So what are ways that it gets screwed up badly? Those are good to notice. And yeah, good to notice because they exacerbate the cultural pain and wounding as part of the history. And I would say none of them that I'm going to list are about being of the wrong ancestry. That's not the problem necessarily. The problem, like, it can be a lot of things, but the most common thing I see is a failure to appreciate the depth of training required. A lot of Westerners of whatever race will go to a place and like a more indigenous, culturally intact place for like a week or a month or 2 months and be like, thanks for the culture, bro. I'm going to go home, put up a website. I got this. And it's not really how it goes. So there's a real cooking and getting trained in a thing that is typically required in order to be a lineage carrier. And that takes years. If it goes well, it takes just years. And so failure to appreciate just how much transformation is required to mature into being a upholder of any given thing. Another is failure to successfully tend to the human relationships. You can go train in a thing and then not know how to maintain successfully the relationships with the people that are holding down the root culture. And if you then presume to take that into the world, to teach it, to embody it, you're quite vulnerable. And the pathways for reciprocity back to the root culture are reduced because you're not tending to the human relationships. So there's a need, especially if you're not of the blood ancestry, you didn't grow up in the culture, you're not immersed in it, there's an even higher need to really successfully tend to the relationships with the people in that culture for the sake of reciprocity and just, it's an integrity piece. Another way that people mess it up is making major unsupported changes in the tradition. It happens a lot in, let's say, Yoruba practice. There's a step in Ifa divination called Ebo Riru. And there are people of African, Latino, European ancestry who are otherwise pretty trained in Yoruba divining methods who leave out that step in the West because it's expensive, because it involves processing animals, and it's expensive because it's a lot of work and it requires supplies, and it causes divination to be a bigger deal. It's a more involved process. And I see people leave it out of convenience or whatever. It's called Ebo Riru. It's a just kind of a prayer, an elaborate prayer spell, if you will, with a lot of chanting and offerings that happens a separate day usually from the reading. And when people leave it out, it's kind of baffling to Yoruba people. It's like, why would you do divination and not do that step? because it's inconvenient and Westerners don't want to pay for it. And yes, that's the correct spelling, Laura. And I understand the motivation to leave it out. But what I'm saying is it's a major unsupported change to the tradition. And it causes the integrity of the practice to wobble if you leave it out. And so if you are clear when you get involved in a tradition that you want to do that for a living and you want to do that for others, research what's involved and try to picture it happening in the culture where you're operating and be like, can I do this? Like, if I really love the Native American church, can I really like harvest a bunch of peyote and have it and actually do that? You should think that through if it's really what you want to do first, because otherwise you get in a situation where you're really invested and you kind of want to change the tradition. But as soon as you do that, your integrity wobbled. And I do. I'm going to get to that, Christopher. Yeah. Another way of just a few other ways that people mess it up. And then we're going to talk about constructive approaches and then we'll be in dialogue for the rest of the time. Or questions. One is over prioritizing personal intuition, or people sometimes say in pagan culture, unsubstantiated personal gnosis is kind of a clunky way to say the spirits told me so. I've seen people in Ifa practice, which tends to be very ritually elaborate, basically when they don't know how to do a thing. And it's understandable. I've done it at times, but if you don't know how to do a thing and just be like, oh, I'm going to divine on what to do. Well, it's a little bit like if you don't know dentistry and you really don't know how to do a root canal, you don't want to tune into the spirits on it. You don't want to divine on it. You want to be like, I don't got this yet. I better not do this root canal. And so there's a thing about ritual protocol that you can't just fill in. If it's an established tradition, you can't just fill in the gaps with your intuition. You need to be asked, what are the things that need to stay true to form? And what are the things that there actually is a lot of creativity and intuition allowed? But just using your intuition or your perhaps quite real connection with the spirits to patch up what you don't know, that's skipping steps in the training. And it gets back to like the wanting to take shortcuts in the training. And a final thing is a lot of folks get involved in a thing and they think that because they love it, other people need to do it, which is silly and developmentally young and inflated. And they think that because they love it, it means they're supposed to teach it to others. And in most traditional societies that I have any acquaintance with, most people are involved in ritual some. And at least in Yoruba culture, a good number of people are even initiated into different priesthoods, but a minority of them are working priests. So you might actually go deep in ritual work with a culture not of your blood ancestry, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's your destiny or your calling to be a lineage holder in a way that you're serving others from that base, from that platform. And so sometimes Westerners are too quick to make I love it, I'm immersed in it, therefore I must be a working priest kind of jump. And that's not everybody's way. You can go deep in a tradition just because you love it and you don't have to necessarily do it for others. So those are some of the ways people get in the weeds. And another is not understanding what the agreements of that tradition are. Like if you just love some different kind of native lineage, let's say it's Lakota lineage, for better or for worse, Lakota ways have been shared pretty widely outside of South Dakota at this point, the most widely shared native North American tradition, which is complicated. But, you know, most of the Lakota people I've talked with about that are kind of like, it's complicated. It's kind of a mess, but some people come with integrity. And so it's not a black and white situation. And so if you know though, that you want to do that professionally, it's going to be a problem. That tradition does not tend to lend itself to you doing ritual services for payment. And so other traditions do. And so you can't just roll up and change the fundamental agreements about how the tradition operates. You're going to exacerbate the cultural history of oppression and just taking. I mean, that is, you know, that's essentially a good example of cultural appropriation, which I associate with the act of, I see it as like disrespectful taking and coming without reciprocity. So having been a downer for 20, 25 minutes, let me try to shift into what are a handful of things that I think can be beneficial in how we approach this. One, know whether or not you're invited. Not all traditions want you around. If the tradition does not welcome outsiders, you can ask twice if you want. You can even ask three times. But if they don't want you there, move along. Be willing to hear no. Don't be a pushy jerk about it. And so some traditions, it's a clear no. Some traditions, it's a clear yes. And others, a lot of others, it's nuanced. So, but if you got a clear no, move along. It's not available. I'm not aware of people being able to go train in like Hopi or Pueblo tradition. Don't do it. It's not open. It's not, you know, you're not invited. And another thing is you want to be really good with your own ancestry, your own blood people. If you're not, there's a risk that you're going to come into a situation with a kind of hungry ghost energy, with a neediness that is off-putting to others and has this like, are you my mother kind of attitude toward the tradition you've come to, and sets you up to get slammed by the people you're idealizing, which probably are not worthy of idealization. So it means you drop your discernment. And it's just bad news if you don't know and love your own ancestors already. A lot of indigenous traditions will insist that you do that if you come around anyways. Be like, hey, get to know your own ancestors like for a decade and buy some good therapy and then come back. And they're not going to say that, but it's like, go handle yourself. And then if you actually go handle yourself, which is good advice, and you come around, it's like, oh, hi, I'm coming from a different place. How are you? So the underlying energy shifts. Another way to get it right is to see it as family, not as a like Walmart of religion. So if you want to be involved in indigenous tradition X or whatever, what you're saying is I'm open to the possibility of forming family level ties with any given culture, provided they would have me, provided it's, you know, it's same good people. The people that I've witnessed have multi-year successful relationships as non-native people with native people, or with like Yoruba people aren't technically considered indigenous by United Nations, but they're, I'd say, ancestrally intact West African people. They're maintaining relationship. They're sending money home. Like I send money home to Nigeria regularly. It's a pay-to-play tradition. I accept the terms. And if I didn't, it would be less solid, the connection. And is it possible to see that as exploitative? I suppose, but that's not how it feels to me. That's not how it, that's not my instinct on it. And sure, it could, any given less white person, if we're going to talk about it in terms of race, which is too simplistic, but less indigenous person, if you will, could potentially be exploitative. But in general, expect if you're going to be involved with people that are from more tribal situations, good chance they don't have as much money as you do. Good chance. And they might see you as a source of financial support. Great. Consider participating in that if you have the means to do it. Not everyone does, but be creative. See if there are ways you do have the means to do it. Send money back. You don't want it to be only about the money, but nothing says reciprocity like $500. You can give a lot of speech to it, but a lot of people know what to do with money. And so if you are in a position, because there's some exchange in some way in which the traditions are nourishing your life, to give back financially, that's often really helpful. Like the people I know that are in good relationship with Lakota elders send money back a lot. And the Lakota family's like, hey, sure would be good to have heat this winter. Can you help? So they get money together and they send them money. And great. So be open to getting hit up for money. It's the cost of being part of an actual family, because families share. And if you want to be part of family and you got money and your brother, sister from a different mother does not have money, you share it with them. That's what families do. So that can get tricky, but well, you want to participate. So that's what I've seen, is it's part of the terrain. Another is accept that the bar is higher for outsiders around changing stuff. Like if I wanted to presume to change some aspect of Yoruba protocol, I would need at least another like 20 years of leaning in and to have a very good case for adjusting some relatively minor aspect of protocol. And it probably would get dismissed immediately. And it happens fairly and unfairly. It happens with the world's 800 million non-Arab Muslims getting dissed by Arab Muslims, even though they're not less Muslim. They just aren't native Arabic speakers. And so Arabs are kind of like, eh. And if you're not super insider to the tradition, the bar is higher. And you need to be even more trained in it than insiders. And that might seem unfair, but it's actually just accept it. It's going to be easier to just accept it. So you need to go the extra mile to try to learn the language, to try to learn the traditions in a really true to form way. And people are still going to give you attitude even if you do that. So there's a certain amount of surrender to the discipline, having thick skin, and signing up for the relationship year after year. If you want to do that, if you want to be a lineage carrier who's introducing others to the traditions. So almost done talking here, then we'll be in dialogue. That might be most of what I want to say. The piece, let me look at the questions here in a sec, but I think you said, do people have an obligation to tend to the material conditions? Yes. I mean, the short answer, Christopher, is yes. Like if the way I see it is, rather than an obligation to share money, the way that I prefer to frame it is the ethic of indigenous traditions generalizing is of family relationships. And if you want to be part of a spiritual family, then families share. You don't have a family where somebody's got a ton of money and their siblings are starving, and that's okay. It doesn't cause conflict. One of the oldest taboos on earth is around hoarding and not sharing what you have. And so as soon as you see people as family, it's just what you do. Yeah. So yes. And then I see a question from Dave. Let me appreciate it here. Don't change the agreements. Might be important to say it's hard to disentangle culture and spirituality. It's only really in the West that this happens. Yeah, for sure. One example is Yoruba culture generalizing here. It doesn't tend to be unusually trans, queer, LGBTQ friendly. Now it's mostly Western evangelicals that have contributed to anti-gay laws in West Africa, Uganda, and Nigeria. Still, having said that, Yoruba culture, it's just not the most queer-friendly culture on the planet. And most people just don't ask about the topic. Personally, I'm quite committed to trans, queer, LGBT rights, etc. It's just like an intrinsic part of my values. And I'm an initiate in the culture. What do I do with that? Like, how much is culture and how much is tradition? I guess I would say for me, and this is conversations I've had with other initiates who are not straight and who keep that kind of private because they don't want to get blown up within the tradition, is that if I felt the core teachings of the tradition did not support my values or they weren't congruent with my core values around this, then I probably wouldn't practice it. But I'm also aware that that's not a fight that I'm rushing to have within the tradition. And so the reality that there may be things that some people would define as culture, like culture and spirituality are no different. It's all a way of life. And I would say, well, respectfully, this tradition is now growing out of its homeland. And we do, we kill dogs and offer them to Ogun in Nigeria. It's quite intimate to watch a dog get its head cut off in front of you. We have a taboo on that culturally. And it is not something I wish to practice here. There are other ways to feed Ogun besides killing dogs. So I'm not going to do it. And I don't, it's not a deal breaker for involvement in the tradition. If I was an Ogun priest, it might be like, oh, I guess I'm going to do that when I'm back in Nigeria. It's not going to happen here. So there are going to be issues like that. I mean, Lakota people eat dog soup too. It's fine. It's, I mean, it's fine for them. Sunka, it's a sacred thing. And most people in this culture don't want to kill puppies and eat them. It's just not going to happen. And so your measure of what you do to honor tradition doesn't mean you can't still object and have a voice within a larger system. And but it's a great question about what's culture and what's like the tradition. And it is totally a Western idea that they're separable, right? Because it's just a way of life. It's not so much about what you believe, it's like how you live. So what is it like to, like, I'm not going to be like Yoruba lifestyle all the time necessarily. Traditions, when they expand beyond their ancestral homeland, which traditions do, they just do sometimes, are subject to influence and the input from other places as well. It's just, there's no way around it. And that's, it's complicated. It's complicated hashing out. And elders within the tradition's homeland tend to get that. Like Wande Bimbala is a worldwide Awishe or spokesperson of Ifa. He doesn't come to the States and he's not like, yo, Americans, kill some dogs. Ogun's hungry. Like, he gets that it's a taboo here. So yeah, good. We're going to be in question mode. I'm going to scan the questions and see what's happening. If you all got a question, go ahead and type it in. And yeah, can you receive ritual that then closely resembles ritual practice from another culture intuitively? You can, but if it's important to not claim that it is that culture, for one, but also, like, I hear people say, for example, oh, the sweat lodge is universal, it's found all around the world. It's not. Sorry, it's not. It's kind of like a plains culture thing. And there are hot rock ceremonies in some other parts of the Americas, but they're not really in Africa. Maybe one or two places. It's too hot to do hot rock ceremonies. Nobody wants to do that. And so, and the sauna is, it's just not a sweat lodge. And so when people say, I'm not saying to the Ishwa that this describes your situation, but I'm speaking to it more generally. I've heard people say, oh, this is an all people's lodge, or it's a lodge that just came to me from spirit or whatever. You can do that. I'm not saying people can't do that, but that form, if you're taking willows and bending them and covering them with skins or tarps or whatever you cover them with, and bringing hot rocks in from a mound that you dug up where the fire pit was, and there's a certain form that is so clearly coming from the plains cultures that's been widely shared. So if you take that form and you say, oh, the spirits gave it to me, well, you were pretty suggestible because you'd seen that form before. Come on now. Like, you're borrowing from that plains culture. So just own it. Just be like, I took this form and I changed it, and this is what we're doing. It's more honest. And I'm not saying you should or shouldn't do that. Everybody has to decide what your settings are. But it's important to not act like the spirits gave you something that you actually just saw in another place. Yeah. Another question from Dari. Creating new practices based on, inspired by indigenous cultures, people who don't wish to culturally appropriate. For sure. One thing, Martin Prechtel, for all, you know, he's a character, but he's writes great books and he's really does a lot of good service in the world. And one of the things that I really respect about his approach is that he seems to be saying that if you study with or have contact with indigenous cultures, they can wake up a kind of dormant indigeneity or earth honoring sensibility within us that can be a really creative kind of energy that can allow for new forms to arise that are local to where you're at and that are not claiming to be something else, that actually beneficially feed the spirits and get good results ritually. Maladoma, somebody definitely has a similar kind of angle on that. And I like what they're saying. The challenge there is when we want to ritually coordinate with others, then we have to either say, hey, this is the way I do it. Do you want to also do it this way? Which works. Or like the challenge is finding the common language for ritual. That's the advantage of tradition, is that like when I went to Nigeria to do my initiations, there's 25 people aged like 6 to 86 in the room who all know the songs, the same songs. And that's hard to do when you're just arriving with a fresh ritual from the other world, which is beautiful and it's perfect and a clean process in a lot of ways. It's just challenging to get to community ritual. So thanks. I'm looking at another question here. Keep the questions coming, folks. I could just talk, but I'd rather like, give me something like contentious to address. It's more exciting. I see the question about where intuition leads to rituals that look like rituals from other cultures. Yeah, well, again, I kind of spoke to it, but you just need to be mindful of, you might come up with a ritual that the spirits genuinely gave you that looks like something from other cultures. You might find an eagle feather, for example, and you might be like, but the eagle gave it to me. And it did. I mean, presumably, if you pick it up, you find it, you leave an offering, it's got a magical feel to it. You find a feather in the woods. Nobody's saying you're a jerk because you found a feather on your walk. It's still a felony to possess it. Like, you can't be like, but the spirit said. Well, Native people have dealt with a tremendous amount of oppression about the ceremonies not even being legal until the late 70s. And so, it's important to still understand the outer laws culturally, the outer reality that we're in, if you bring through new traditions. About psychologizing traditions, yeah. So much to say about that, in a sense. I see it as it's a kind of appropriation, really. I mean, the word appropriation fits for me in that situation. I see people... it's tricky. As a therapist who does ritual stuff, I will sometimes try to unpackage the psychological implications of relating with this or that deity. But so in a sense, indigenous systems have their own psychologies, of course. And so one question is, if you're translating any given indigenous teaching into a psychological mode that works for Westerners, would the indigenous grandmas and grandpas of that tradition, if they're listening in on the conversation, feel that what you're doing is staying true to the spirit of what you're talking about? If so, they might be like, oh, this young person really knows what they're saying. They're doing a good job of honoring the spirit of what they're talking about and bringing it to a new audience. Okay, that's good. They understand that they're talking about deities, and when they talk about them, they're in the room and they're lighting them up. But if you talk about sacred powers from only a psychological stance, you, at best, you kind of look silly to the initiates of those powers, like you're playing around with something you don't understand. And at worst, you can unhelpfully, you can give the people you're talking to the sense that they're just aspects of self, or they're just symbols or something like that. Because the deities, the I don't know, the powers, the sacreds, the old beings that hold up the world, they're real, and they're not you, and you can't control them. And if you try to do that, it's going to go badly. And they'll hopefully just blow you off rather than show you it in a less comfortable way that they're real. So that leap into a more animistic framework is in some ways the most important one for Westerners to make when they're approaching these old traditions. I hope that speaks to a little bit, Christopher. There's a good question from Dare. On a basic level, is the accusation of cultural appropriation essentially an accusation of deep disrespect and violence toward a marginalized, presumably non-white group? For me at this point, I see the language of cultural appropriation. It causes me to cringe a little bit because of how charged and like call outy the energy around it has become. But that doesn't mean there aren't real legitimate concerns. So it's, for one, it's not only about white, non-white. I've seen Black Americans culturally appropriate West African traditions. There are white people who culturally appropriate white Sami traditions. And so it's not only about race, although it certainly can dovetail with racism. And so for me, cultural appropriation is, I do see it as an accusation or perhaps an observation of what the one naming it views as a unequal exchange, a disrespectful exchange, a lack of consideration for the source culture, and typically one that's without permission or without reciprocity or without mindfulness. And so disrespectful, lopsided exchange that often is following along the contours of historical oppression and marginalized groups being exploited by less marginalized groups. So it's often following along those contours. But and it's important, just because the dialogue can get mired in a online call-out culture, to not dismiss the real concerns that are raised around cultural appropriation. But what I see a lot, I see you have a question as well, I'm going to get to what I see a lot, and it chaps me a little bit, is mostly the people who are doing the calling out are not rooted in ritual work. They're not necessarily doing the transformative, messy, confusing, year after year inner work of actually showing up for ritual. Some are, and the ones who are tend to have a more nuanced attitude around it. And they tend to be willing to have a conversation rather than just put someone on social media blast. And so it matters who's speaking. There's a trend that concerns me in some social justice circles of young, often white activists who really haven't done a lot of their own inner work, engaging in bullying behavior toward people who are essentially have a lot more life experience and would best be approached with a dialogue rather than a call out. And so I'm not saying that's most people, but in the culture of social media, that can become a toxic dynamic that actually distracts from the heart of the real issues that need work through. So yeah, I do see it usually as a call out, which is not always so constructive. It can be, but it's not a very relational way to seek to move a thing forward. So let me look at what Isabel's got. When seeking out a tradition you weren't raised to, and check in with yourself, find if you're emotionally invested in getting into the tradition, ask yourself why there's so much emotion. So it's great to be conscientious about your motivations for getting involved. And in my case, I didn't feel like I had a lot of draw to Yoruba stuff. It just was like the tradition on like the dating profile that continued to have the most match. It's like, oh my God, I'm like, my views and everything is really compatible with this tradition. And so it's not about the spark. The spark and that kind of draw to a tradition, it's not necessarily a good thing. It's kind of like you get in a relationship and you're like, oh, we have all these past lives together. Great. How's that going? And so sometimes that's good, sometimes not. So there are all kinds of motivations to be drawn to a thing. So absolutely, Isabel, to be curious about them. And that's a great question, Dave. Do some traditions want to be spread? I totally think they do. Or the Orisha to me seem very outward facing and very in a way that's a kind of upsetting to me sometimes. Like I'm involved with Orisha stuff and I'll be like, oh, you don't want that. It's like complicated. There's a lot of blood. It's expensive. It's you're going to culturally get into all kinds of complicated terrain. Don't do it. And then the Orisha are like sending them a dream and they're like lighting people up. And so some deities seem very like they have energy to recruit in a way that is kind of bold. The Orisha, God, I love them. And they're a little pushy. They're happy to expand. And Yoruba people are happy for that to happen. The traditionalists there are under siege by colonialism that's being imported and by Christianity and Islam being judgy toward traditionalists. So when non-Yoruba people come there and pay money to do ritual work in Orisha tradition, the Yoruba people typically are like, yeah, look at Americans coming here not to do Christianity, not to do Islam, just saying. And so it's a point of pride. And I was there two trips ago, and I speak some Yoruba now, and I got up enough nerve to talk to people for a couple minutes, and there's all the guys, and it's intense. But I talked to them for a little bit in Yoruba. Okay, real quiet, just to make me nervous. But it was good. And then after, I got a translation on it, but they took all the kids up and basically gave them a talking to. They're like, if this Oyinbo comes and learns your language, you need to learn it. You need to know it. Like, look, this is America coming to value this. You need to value it. And I'm like, you know, if you want to flip the script on the privilege and all that and use it in that way, that's fantastic. Like, I'm happy to be used in that way, so to speak. And I was able to tell them in Yoruba, yes, you need to know about Ifa. And they're kind of like, this is weird, but we kind of like it. So, so just the fact that like I'm aware of being a white guy when I'm there, but there are ways that that can actually, I guess, be leveraged to bring respect and curiosity to the tradition among Yoruba people. They're like, why are you doing this? Why are you coming here? I'd be like, oh, your tradition's beautiful. They're like, oh, why do you think that? Well, let me tell you. So good. We'll finish in just a few minutes, but other just questions, things to put out here. This is kind of like a mercifully non-charged interaction. I don't think it's only because you're all on mute, but sorry. What do I want to say about this? I think that people have been sharing across cultural groups for a very long time. Intertribal marriage is an ancient example of how intentional exchange helps to keep the peace. I think generalizing here, interracial people have a particularly important and sacred voice to bring to these conversations in the times ahead. And it's not inherently bad to get involved with a tradition that's not of your blood. If it's not your calling, don't do it. As a friend, Terry, likes to say, if you don't want it, you can't have it. It's great. I totally agree. And so if you don't want to get involved in Native tradition as a white person, don't do it. If you judge other people who do it, you're overstepping because you're presuming to know their experience, unless you happen to be a spokesperson for the Native community they're getting involved with. But as a white person, if you find yourself speaking on behalf of or speaking over Native people or African people, that's good to notice. It's good to notice. And Native people, African people, don't have one monolithic voice. There are some African American folks who don't feel good about non-Africans being involved in Yoruba tradition. I don't have a need to argue with those folks. Their conclusions are really understandable in a lot of ways. And it's not even my place to say whether or not they're understandable, but from where I'm sitting, they are. And it's not how Yoruba people tend to see it, because they don't have the same history around race there. Not in the same way. So the exchange is not inherently problematic. If you're drawn to it, don't be afraid, but know that it's complicated and it requires holding a family-oriented view and really tending to the question of reciprocity and knowing that a lot is at stake. And if you mess it up, you mess it up for all of your people and you worsen the trauma historically. And if you get it right, you get it right in a way that reverberates beneficially. So there's a lot at stake when we're interacting cross-culturally. But there's a lot at stake when we're having a conversation, because it's you and all your people talking to whoever you're talking to and all their people. So it's not so different, really. It's 9, so we'll finish in a minute or two. It's fine if folks need to peel off the call. Let me just take a breath. It's fine if others have any questions. Oh, I do want to say another thing. Because I'm wading around in this terrain and even choosing to speak to it as a privileged, cisgendered, American white guy, I sometimes get some fiery input from others. And there's a part of me that could get all bent out of shape about that or take it personally or feel like that's not fair. And what I've really come to see is it's like, Daniel, just, it may not be constructive all the time, what's coming at you, but it's the price of entry if you really want to hang in this terrain. And so if you choose to get involved in a cross-cultural, multicultural situation, don't complain a lot if some heat comes to you. It's good to have some thick skin and to figure out how to have an open heart and thick skin. So the open-hearted rhinoceros is kind of the, like, you know, the way to go with it. And you just, because if you get all bent out of shape every time somebody comes at you, you're just going to crawl back in your hidey hole and be like, I better go do white people things because I don't want to get my feelings hurt. Okay, you can do that. But then you bump back into your lack of interesting white people things to do. So what are you going to do? Let me look at this last question here. how to introduce ancestors of blood and ancestors of spiritual lineage. Rose is talking about being a tantrika with Jewish, Irish, Catholic ancestors. Slowly. It's like a mixer. I think you have like a just meet and greet before you totally ask them to cosmically merge. But it's an ongoing, it's a bigger question, but it's a relevant ritual question of how you respectfully harmonize your relationships with ancestors of spiritual lineage and of blood lineage. Make sure each are well on their own terms and then see how they would wish to enter into conversation and they'll show you. Yeah. I'm going to stay on for just a minute. There's another good question from Leah. How to engage in ethical reciprocity with traditions that are very westernized and appropriated already. For example, yoga. I mean, meditation can mean a lot of things, so it depends what kind of meditation. But if possible, seek practitioners that are more rooted in intact lineages. I think the vitality of the practice tends to be more present, at least in my experience, when people have intact lineages. And so ask about their lineages, ask how they handle that. And I, you know, don't ask it during class. Don't be that person who's a shit and just like needs to hog the attention during class. Talk to them after class if you really want to know about it. And if you don't resonate with what they're doing, be like, peace, and go find someone you do resonate with. Like, taking up the job of being the culture police is not, I don't know, it's not my calling. Like, maybe it's your calling, but I'm not saying it is, Leia, but the try to find it, lineages that resonate with you. And I think a lot of yogic lineages, a lot of those practices have been shared generously. And so know that not all cultures are equally bent out of shape about the sharing of their traditions. Some are, some aren't. And so some things are given freely. I incorporate an Andean-inspired despacho ceremony into some of my ritual. Not a mesa carrier, not a paco. I'm not presuming to be like a caro practicing person. But the Andean people I've shared it with are like, cheers, looks nice, get it. And they're not bent out of shape about it. It's a kind of basic ritual that's been shared very widely. So, yeah. Great. Yeah, and Dave's adding to do what research you can about what the traditions practices look like in their original context. And if they include killing dogs, then don't do that still. And so, sorry, not all traditions look nice in their home context. Some traditions do human sacrifice. Don't do that. It's illegal. So, good. So let's finish up. Thanks, everybody. I hope there's been something of use and benefit for you. It's deep terrain, so tread mindfully, but do tread. Do participate. It's in the crashing around with each other that we learn and grow. So thank you. And just as a final plug, I have a book out, Ancestral Medicine, Rituals for Personal and Family Healing. And it's very exciting, and I'm actually happy with it. So consider owning that book if you want it. Thanks, everybody. The call will be up on the... Let me stop recording.